When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 41 of the Bandwagon Hockey Podcast. We are back after a hiatus. No real specific reason why. I guess life just got busy in November as it does. What day is it? It is Monday, December the 4th. It is Christmas season. Ryan, is this the least, this is the least I've ever cared about Christmas. I don't know what it is. It's in 3 weeks and I just don't care.
Yeah, I think I...
For you, it comes with a break.
Yeah.
That's a lot different.
Say next. Yeah, because like I'm still kind of in the school cycle. Christmas still kind of comes with that break you're looking forward to. So I'm still on that, like... at least looking forward to that time of year. But like, I could totally understand how you just get into the grind of just living life now.
Yeah. It's really strange. For those who don't know, I graduated and I'm just working now. So my version of Christmas break is probably 80% of my team being off between Christmas and New Year's. So it's just going to be kind of chill. I'm going to be working. So it's going to be super chill. Like I did my co-op there and it was like you could almost just do nothing all week, which is nice, but it's not like a stress relief from exams and you're not coming off of the lows of exams going into like the highs of the holiday season. So it's like I just don't care. I don't know why. It's kind of a bummer. It's also like I'm not living at home so that we don't have all the Christmas decorations and we don't have a tree yet. I don't know if
we're going to get one. Also like I don't know about you guys back in Ottawa, but like we just got substantial snow today.
So yeah,
like,
we got a big dump today.
Yeah.
We got a big dump today. I have my own little snow day. Like I was supposed to be in the office today.
Yeah, me too. I was supposed to have classes like all day, but they got canceled.
All right, let's talk about hockey.
All right.
A lot has happened. I don't even remember like what was happening when we last did a podcast. I think it was 2 weeks ago. Lots happening. There's a lot of bad teams. There's a lot of bad teams. It's really weird. I think that's where we should start. We were kind of ripping through some topics, thinking about like kind of just looking at who's where, what's notable, what's not. And I think one of the most notable things is just like, you know how normally there's like, I don't know, 8 teams that are under 500 at the end of the year or at any given time in the season, really, like it's just because of the loser point. How many teams, like, the amount of teams that are beneath fake 500 and the amount of, like, imposter teams, like, truly imposter teams. Like, if you're 12-2 and if you're 12, like, 7-3, like, that's a decent-looking record, but whatever.
You almost said the Washington Capitals record exactly, and that's who I had in mind.
Okay, mine is the Islanders. The Islanders are 10-7-6.
Yeah.
The Tampa Bay Lightning are 10-10-5, which is like, if you look at it, wins, losses, that's a pitiful record. That's 10-15. Like, that's bad. Islanders 10-13. We'll get into it probably, but the Leafs only have 8 regulation and overtime wins. Like, they've got 4 shootout wins, which I...
They have 5 regulation wins.
Oh, so 3 of those regulation and overtime are overtime.
Yeah.
That's great. That's bad.
Like, I think like, it's tied with San Jose or something.
Yeah, it's
like
tied
that.
For the worst, I think, with San Jose and Chicago,
it's
maybe.
Absurd.
Okay. Because I remember seeing that stat, and then I just saw just now that they had 8 regulation and overtime wins. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe they've won a few since I saw that stat. But then you just said it's just regulation, not overtime. So that means that they've won a game in 60 minutes, less than half of the amount of times they've won a game.
They've won like four in the shootout.
So the Leafs are 11th in the league right now. And if you look at all of the regulation overtime wins, like it's what you'd expect. Rangers 17, Boston 16, 13, 16, 14, 14, 13, 14, 13, 13. Toronto at 8, and then back up to Winnipeg at 13, Washington and the Islanders at 10, or sorry, Washington and the Coyotes at 10. Like Toronto's regulation and overtime wins is down with the Canadiens and the Kraken and the Wild of the NHL. And like, as you said, their regulation wins are even worse than that. But anyway, we're not trying to zero in on the Leafs. They're just kind of like a bigger... They're a microcosm of the issue with the league right now, is that so many bad teams are buoyed by this stupid fucking loser point, and there's just a lot of bad teams.
It feels like the, like, I don't know if the stats actually back this up, but it feels like there's a record amount of 3-point games going on too. Like, it feels like every game in the East that involves like two East teams is going to overtime. Like, it just, it feels ridiculous. Like you said, it's floating a lot of these teams.
Seattle's 8, 11, and 6.
Yeah, anybody with over like 4 or 5 loser points, just frauds right now, to be honest.
If you have more than like 3 right now, it's like, what are we doing? Yeah,
true.
Like, what are we doing? Like, at the quarter way.
Vegas. I'll give Vegas their 16, 5, and 4.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know, man. And like, okay, let's go in on the West then. Like, we were both looking at the standings, checking this out, and the West is like freaking a catastrophe right now. Like,
you want to take a quick peek at the San Jose Sharks goal differential?
-60, isn't it? -55. That's good stuff.
Like, we're 25 games into the season.
Oh, yeah,
that's like crazy. That's like a number you see maybe at the end of the season for the worst team in the league.
Isn't like they accumulated like a third of that in 2 games, didn't they? When they lost like 10-1 and 10-2 on back to back nights or something.
That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, Chicago is same amount of points, a little bit of a better points percentage than the Sharks, and their goal differential is only -29, which is so bad. Yeah. But like -55 is crazy. -55. Is like legitimately what you'd expect from a bottom 3 team at the end of the season.
Mm-hmm. And like for comparison, like East to West, Ottawa's last in their division right now with a +1 goal differential. Like, it's.
Let's talk about the divisions. The Pacific is kind of hilarious. Edmonton's coming. They've won 4 in a row. You wouldn't know it based off of where they are in the standings, which is just so hilarious. But the Pacific has 5 teams that are under 500, not fake 500, they're under fake 500, right? They have more regulation losses than regulation wins, or more regulation losses than wins. Yes. Fake 500 is when you have more wins than regulation losses, but your overtime and shootout losses brings that losses number above, but because NHL, it makes you seem like you're a good team. However, after that little dance I just did with my words there, 5 teams in the Pacific have less wins than regulation losses, which is not supposed to be a thing, because I direct your attention to the Metropolitan, Atlantic, and Western, or not Western, Central divisions, where no less than 6 teams are beneath, or no less than 6 teams are above fake 500.
Mm-hmm.
Did I have that right? Yes.
Sure. Let's roll with it.
The Atlantic has 5 teams over fake 500. The Metro is 7. And the Central has 6. So I was close. And the Pacific has 3. What are your thoughts on the Pacific Division? What are your thoughts on the Western Conference playoff picture right now? Because right now, I believe... Yeah, Arizona and St. Louis are our last 2 teams in.
To me, there's only like 5 relevant teams in that whole conference.
Right now. And one of them is Vancouver.
Yeah, and one of them is Vancouver. So we'll see if that kind of maintains itself. But yeah, like it, right now, the playoff picture, in my opinion, is only Colorado, Dallas, Vegas, Vancouver, and LA. Mm-hmm. Even though 3 other teams have to make it.
Yeah.
That's kind of it.
But you know one of those 3 teams are going to win a round.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's hockey, 100%.
One of those Western Conference wildcard teams are winning a round.
Yeah, like Seattle's going to sneak in somehow and beat Dallas or something. First round. So, like, Seattle will sneak in and beat Vegas.
Yeah, it'll be something stupid, and they get waxed in the second round by the Stars. No, I think LA is the best team in the West right now.
I think so too.
Kind of obsessed with their team. I think they're so cool. I don't like it when people remember they were like the what did you call it, the rebuild brothers of the Sens.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, is well, that what for you, a while there they were
rebuild siblings of the Sens, and then LA just had a bunch of players that wanted to play for them and then just took off, which is how it happens in a major American market. Because the Rangers were in the same boat. Both the Rangers, I kind of like how the Rangers and the Kings' rebuilds kind of mimicked each other. Mm-hmm. They both started fairly late in the 2010s, I want to say. LA maybe a little bit earlier than that because they had a couple high picks. I want to say they drafted Elias Anderson, 6th overall or something in 2017. But then by the time the 2020s came around, LA was starting to make the playoffs. This will be, I think, the 3rd or 4th year they've made the playoffs in a row. They've lost to Edmonton in the first round back-to-back years. I know that. Mm-hmm. But then they drafted 1-2 in 2020, and both guys had, kind of not really hit their stride, mainly because the team's rosters had beefed up so much in the year or two following, because the Rangers just all of a sudden got good. They kept Kreider, they signed Panarin, Adam Fox got there in 2019, Jacob Trouba. They just had all these guys, Shesterkin emerged. The Rangers had all these guys join their team or stay with their team because they're the Rangers. And then LA, Kopitar and Doughty both had career renaissances. Drew Doughty was the worst contract in the NHL 5 years ago, and he's on that same contract and he's considered not an issue for them. Kevin Fiala wanted to play for the Kings. Pierre-Luc Dubois wanted to play for the Kings. And both teams have just gotten good. And now Byfield and Lafreniere are starting to actually be good players.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I was just going to look at Laf's stats because I know he was off to a pretty good start. I think he's maybe tailed off a bit, but 15 points in 23 games still isn't terrible. I don't know what kind of minutes he's getting.
He's not getting any power play time.
No.
He's still not, because who do you take off? But yeah,
right.
He's 15 of those, he's got 15 points. 2 of them are power play points.
True.
He's got 1 power play goal. And up until this year, that was the big thing with everyone, right? He's a even strength guy. So all of his numbers are real.
17 minutes a game or so. Yeah, it's not bad. He's coming on. What's Byfield at?
Byfield's at 18 points. And I don't think he gets power play time either.
Because I know he was
close. Okay, he's at 2.5 minutes of power play time.
Okay.
Per game. Playing 15 a night, so still light. I think he's on the wing.
He's playing 2 minutes less per game than Laf too.
But both guys are showing signs, right?
Yeah.
And I personally like that. Obviously Ottawa is gonna win that draft. They have won that draft, whatever. But just seeing those two teams, that'd be, because they matched up in the 2014 Stanley Cup final. It's actually crazy how similar the both franchises have been in the last 10 years.
It's just really cool to see a draft develop in just general too, because I think Marco Rossi now is at, I want to say, 8 goals. That top 10 to 15 that was supposed to be stacked are actually starting to become impactful players. It's cool to see.
I think Raymond's been good this year too for Detroit.
Yeah, he's come back from kind of a down year last year.
Yeah, Raymond's at 8 goals, 19 points in 23 games, playing 17 minutes a night. I think he's on the top line with Larkin and DeBrincat there.
Yeah.
No, that draft class, like, it was supposed to be like absurdly sick.
Yeah. Yeah, like the top 15 to 20 were all supposed to be like semi-impactful players at least.
And up until last year, it had only really been Tim Stützle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sanderson kind of had his coming out party last year, which was rewarded with the big contract. And coming into this year, it was all
Raymond Tim had a good Sanderson. Rookie year, but came Who? Down in his Raymond had a good rookie year, but kind of came down a bit. But yeah, no, it's cool to see the 2020 class kind of thrive in here.
It's especially cool too, right? Because I think. And I don't know how much I can speak to this, but I know that a lot of the years in the 2010s, like from 2010 till 2019, guys who were drafted high were hitting right away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, true. I think McKinnon, so starting in 2013, I think McKinnon won the Calder Trophy and had like 60 points in his rookie year. He tailed off a bit and then signed that like sweetheart deal that ended up lasting most of his prime. And then 14, you got, who was that draft? That was Ekblad, who was good right away, like as an 18-year-old defenseman, was good right away. And then you had Dreisaitl come out like 2 years after as a third overall pick that no one really knew about. And then obviously you had the back-to-back with McDavid, Eichel, Matthews, Laine. 17 had Makar come into the league as a rookie like a year or two later and just light it up and then win a Norris a few years later. 2018, like Quinn Hughes, Rasmus Dahlin played right away. Like all these drafts just had super quick hitters. Brady Tkachuk, Svechnikov, like all those guys started playing right away in like 2018. 2019, similar sort of deal. Like Jack Hughes took a year or two, but who was 2019? Okay, 2019 is a bad example. But like a lot of the 2010s just had guys like break off right away. And 2020 didn't really have that with the top two picks and then a lot of the top 10. I don't know. It's just cool to see you guys like come in and like take some time to develop.
A few other names too that we didn't even get to, like Dawson Mercer, Seth Jarvis, Anton Lundell. it's slowly coming to be Ridly Gregg too, obviously Marco Rossi. I think this is going to turn out to be one heck of a draft actually.
Do you remember ever seeing? I think it was a mock trade that was proposed where LA was needing a goalie in the offseason, right? And a lot of people liked Carter Hart as a trade candidate.
Mm.
And I saw someone float the idea of Byfield for Hart, one for one. And I loved the idea for both teams. Do you do that now if you're LA?
No.
No, I don't think so either. No. Which is kind of sick, right? Like seeing a player's trade value develop in real time based off of what you trade for them.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, anyway, just something I kind of noticed and was wanting to talk about. Kings and Rangers, just kind of a cool parallel there. All right, where do we want to go to next? There's been some trades, a few trades in the last few weeks. Should we start it off, though, with the Corey Perry stuff, or is that kind of just like old news? He's not on the Blackhawks anymore. What are we going to add?
Yeah, I think it's kind of old news. Like anything at this point is just like speculation. We all have a good idea of what happened at this point now that we've allowed information to come out. Well, as much as the NHL will put out. But I think people have a pretty good picture of what happened now and he's off the team. So I'm not sure if we have much more to add.
Yeah. So basically if anyone doesn't know, Carey Perry his contract was terminated by the Blackhawks. It's currently undetermined whether or not he's going to file a grievance. I was reading about it today from Chris Johnson at The Athletic. It's basically, I don't know if you've read this, he put it out about a week ago, but I never got around to reading it. Because he played about a quarter of the season, he's entitled to about a quarter of his $4 million salary. But because he was paid a $2 million signing bonus, he has to give money back to the organization. Mm. So whether or not he decides to fight that or not is to be determined. I think he has 2 months from the time he was released to decide to do that. But now with that sort of hole in their lineup that was created, like, $4 million player playing. I think he was on the power play. Like he was a big piece given where Chicago's at in their winning cycle. And so he just was gone. And especially with Taylor Hall having season ending surgery, like Chicago needed to go get a guy. So they threw a fifth round pick at the Canucks to to take on Anthony Beauvillier. What a trade for Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vancouver turns around, uses that same fifth round pick in a trade along with a third to acquire Nikita Zadorov at his full cap hit from the Calgary Flames. I don't know if you have much thoughts on the Island or not the Islanders, the Blackhawks and Canucks deal with Beauvillier. It's not that big of a deal, but the Zadorov is definitely he's probably like top five trade candidate going into deadline season.
Yeah, no, I do like the move from Vancouver. The when I first saw the price, I was a little like surprised. A third and a fifth, it felt a little light, just the way people were kind of talking about Zadorov and the fact that maybe there was going to be salary retention to bump that price up a bit. But the more you think about it, third and fifth probably makes sense for a guy like Zadorov. He's definitely bottom four guy, probably bottom pairing guy. That's just really big and solid defensively. So fair price. Vancouver's adding to what they think is going to be a good year. It makes a ton of sense all the way around. And like you said, like the assets that they paid were like efficiently spent. We'll put it that way, I guess. Yeah.
It's kind of funny, huh? Like how everyone sees the acquisition price from Vancouver's end, a third and a fifth, and almost flinches at it because it didn't feel like enough, even though it's like perfectly adequate trade value for a rental defensive defenseman who's probably going to play 15 minutes a night for you.
Yeah.
Because rental prices are always so inflated in the NHL. I think people wouldn't have been surprised if the guy went for a first round pick at the deadline.
That's the thing too. I think I was also surprised because easily I feel like you could have driven that price up to, like you said, like a second round pick at the very minimum at the deadline. So
for sure,
it felt weird for Calgary to kind of jump on it now.
Yeah, and I guess
they wanted the guy who didn't want to be there out. So
yeah, like he had requested a trade, right? So you wonder if he was making some noise behind the scenes, or if Calgary just wanted to get rid of the distraction, or since it's so early in the season and Vancouver cleared up that cap space right away, Calgary saw value in getting rid of a guy at his full cap hit rather than having to retain. Because now, assuming Calgary isn't using any other retention slots, which to my knowledge they are not, they've got three more big time pending UFAs to trade that they can now retain on because you can have those three slots, right? So Lindholm, Hanifin, and Tanev, you can retain on all three of those guys to make them even more attractive trade chips to drive up that price come deadline time.
And another thing I didn't realize too is I think the trade brings Calgary out of LTIR problems so that it just gives them more flexibility for roster construction throughout the year as well too. So that makes sense why they didn't want to retain and kind of stay up in that pool.
That's actually a good call that you just mentioned that. Like that adds like,
I heard that price for Calgary. Yeah, I heard that on a pod. That is not my own idea, but
Still, like, yeah, I would have forgot to mention it. It's definitely relevant because, like, Calgary getting a third and a fifth shouldn't be taken at face value. Like, they get rid of a player, they don't have to use a retention slot. People will forget that you can only use three retention slots.
Yeah, and like, what is it? Arizona has one gone for the next 7 years or something. Was it Arizona? I can't remember what this
was. San Jose retained on Erik Karlsson, which was 4 years. I'm trying to think of big retention slots. I can't think of who you're thinking of.
But I know they have.
That was a big part of why Jacob Chychrun was traded for what he was traded for, because everyone thought he was going to go for two firsts, and it ended up being a premium first, like a 12th overall pick. But then the fact that Ottawa didn't need Arizona to retain in order for the trade to go through, which a lot of teams did need, was really appealing to Arizona because I think they were already retaining on someone with multiple years and they didn't want to use up all of their retention slots.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a cap team or as a cap space team, you don't want to be retaining salary on too many players. Otherwise, you get rid of your flexibility. And then the LTIR thing is huge too because Calgary's – they're going to be a seller, and once they trade some of their guys, they'll might be able to even take on money with even more assets as they try to like kick off this little rebuild that they're probably going to go towards. Did you find?
Okay. Yeah, so it's because they retained on Ekman-Larsson, then Ekman-Larsson got bought out.
Yeah.
They have that on their books for like the next 7 years or something like
that. Okay, that's bad. That's so bad. That's...
So not having something like that happen? Well, I guess that wouldn't happen because Zidorov wouldn't get bought out, but nonetheless.
Do you think that's fair to Arizona?
I mean, why not?
I kind of think that like Vancouver doing the buyout shouldn't change how it affects Arizona's like retention slots. Like if you... So let's say they retain, I don't know how much they retain.
I guess that's true because, something else just popped into my head. Because Toronto bought out Murray and nothing affected Ottawa.
Yeah. Well, they didn't buy him out.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They didn't buy out Murray.
Right. Okay. That was LTIR.
Because that's kind of what's flawed, right? If Toronto had bought out Murray, it would have benefited Ottawa. It should just not affect Ottawa. And I know there's a lot of like financial implications and stuff where like logistically and financially that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. But like from a logic and fairness perspective, let's say Arizona had like 4 years of retention on Ekman-Larsson at $1 million. I think the retention brought him from like 8.25 down to like 7.25 or whatever. Mm-hmm. So you're now accounting for 4 years at a $1 million retention, which gets changed to 8 years at whatever the buyout is. But I think that when Vancouver buys out Ekman-Larsson, it should just stay at 4 years times $1 million retention. Anyway, that's just like another of a long list of gripes that you could bring to the NHL head office or whatever.
How we got there, but
we like figured it's almost out. Not even worth talking about. But no, I think I liked the trade for Vancouver. I think I wouldn't have liked it as much if they had given up much more. Mm-hmm. I agree. It'll be interesting to see if they can hold on to the player. I'm way more intrigued by the other guys on Calgary. I'm so excited to see where Tanev ends up and what his acquisition price is, because that guy is a monster. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what happens with Hanifin, because he's like 26 and I've always been infatuated by him as a player. And Lindholm obviously is another big one. So Zadorov definitely one of the smallest fish on the Flames, but one of the bigger fish heading into trade season.
Mm-hmm.
Another cool note I have, which will tie into our ad read today. Arizona is currently on a 4-game heater. And Ryan, do you know, quiz time, you already know the answer. This is not going to be a fun quiz. Who are the four teams in order that they've beaten over the last, I don't know, week and a bit?
I actually don't know if I'm going to get this in order because I don't know which way it went off the top of my head.
It's backwards.
But is it like Vegas?
So from present to back.
Okay. Yeah. I can't even think of it off the top
of my head. Okay. So they beat Vegas.
This kind of stuff.
They beat Vegas, who were the 2023 Stanley Cup champion. They beat Colorado, who were the 2022.
I couldn't even think of 2022.
They beat Tampa Bay, who were the back-to-back champs in 21 and 20. And then they beat St. Louis last night, who were the 2019 Stanley Cup champions. And Ryan, can you tell me who the Arizona Coyotes play tonight?
The Washington Capitals.
And they are that of the 2018 Stanley Cup champion, Washington Capitals. Super interesting little schedule quirk. I really hope that Arizona plays Pittsburgh next, which honestly, if they're in Washington, they're in Arizona. I was going to say, if they're in Washington, there's a non-zero chance that they actually play Pittsburgh next on like a road trip. But they have a chance to go and win 5 in a row against the last 5 Stanley Cup champions, which is so silly, but so cool.
Yeah, it's odd, but it's so fun to talk about. Like the Arizona tweeted out a graphic of it, and it was just, wow. Like, how does that something happen in a season? But it's cool.
It's such a...
Also, the fact that Arizona is the team beating off all of these teams like, is hilarious.
The literal laughing stock of the league for the last 4 years.
Yeah. Aren't they, like, almost in a while? Anyways.
They are. They're fully in the first wild card spot right now. They're, like, they're actually good. Like, I want them to make the playoffs.
I know, me too. Anyways, continue.
All right, that brings us to our ad read. We're going to talk a little bit about Washington and Arizona in a second here. Bet the action on the ice with the DraftKings Sportsbook. Ryan, tonight we've got a matchup for the ages as the Arizona Coyotes look to continue their 4-game heater against previous Stanley Cup excuse me, previous Stanley Cup champions, and they take on, oh my God, I was looking for the ad read and I kept on fluttering my words. Okay, Washington, Arizona is tonight. Washington's favored by a goal and a half. I'm going to have to hammer the minus 1.5 on the Arizona Coyotes. Ride the wave. Washington is a fraudulent winning team. And it's 2023. Always bet the over with these hockey games. They're always goofy. I'm taking Arizona minus 1.5, and I'm smashing that over 5.5 goals. Hopefully Cooley gets me a couple fantasy points. Download the app now and use code THPN. New customers can get $150 instantly in bonus bets for betting just $5 on hockey. That's code THPN, only on the DraftKings Sportsbook, an official betting partner of the NHL. The crown is yours. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, age 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligible and deposit restrictions, returns, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League. All right. Where to now, Mr. Heinemann?
That's a good question. Do you want to spend a minute on Arizona?
Yeah, let's do it. I want them to get Noah Hanifin so badly. I want them to give him...
That would be so fun.
Like a 6-year contract at, I don't know how much money Noah Hanifin should get, maybe 7, 7.5. He can be on that top unit with Sean Durzi, not the top power play unit, that top D pair with Sean Durzi, who is also one of the most underrated defensemen in the NHL at just 25 years old, I want to say, running that top power play unit that they got for peanuts from the LA Kings as the Kings were pursuing Dubois. Or no, it was to clear up cap space for Gavrikov. But no, like, it's just...
Sorry to interrupt, but something I didn't realize is that Connor Ingram has stole that net.
Oh, he's been unreal, man. He's got a 925.
I didn't realize that.
I went to go pick him up in fantasy and saw that Brian had him and got so mad. Because Brian's in first place and is just absolutely crushing everyone. And he's got Connor Ingram in net, who's been just ripping off wins. And, like, it's kind of funny because Ingram's 26. I remember he was on the World Junior team. He was drafted in the third round by Tampa. Like, he was supposed to be a guy, and he just kind of wasn't. But, again, goalies are weird, right? So, like, who knows? Maybe this is their guy. I think they've got a Russian dude in their system coming up, though.
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but...
But I mean, considering where Arizona's at in their winning cycle, in terms of basically, like, they've got their top guy, they've got their guys, like Keller's up, Cooley's up, whatever. But they're like, a lot of what they're doing right now is waiting on all of their prospects to come because they've drafted so many in the last few years. So it's good to have one of those goalies that won't lose you games. That's what you want at this point in your winning cycle, right?
I'm just more surprised too because I thought Vishmalka, I don't know how to pronounce his name, Vimalka.
Yeah.
I just thought he had like really established himself as like a solid goaltender, and obviously the starter in that net. But that is just not the case. He's gone 2-6 this year with .892 save percentage.
Yeah, he's been tough. He was one of the top guys the last few years and saved above expected because of how bad Arizona was.
One other, like, obviously Arizona as a whole is doing pretty well, but one other downside I can see just quickly looking at their stat sheet is Barrett Hayden. He was really coming on
at the
end of last year, but he's only got 4 points in 16 games now. So
yeah, he's hurt too. Tough. I think coming in the year, they were hoping he could be the top line center right away, playing in between Keller and Schmaltz. I think Schmaltz is a winger. Schmaltz might be a center, but anyway, I think they were hoping Hayden could play a top six role in center and have less of the burden on Logan Cooley, obviously. That hasn't really happened, and Hayden's hurt right now, but I mean, Cooley's been good. He's not scoring yet, but he's been good. And like, I've actually watched a couple of Arizona Coyotes games. just because, like, Mullet Arena is still fascinating, and it's, like, a really fun team. Like, their power play is sick. Keller is so good.
Like, we just need to see a playoff series in Mullet. We need to.
It'd be
before they like graduate out of that situation, we need to see a playoff series in Mullet.
But it's just funny because, like, Arizona, they kept Keller, right? Everyone thought he was gonna be like one of the guys that were gonna leave there because they were trading anyone and everyone. But their general philosophy behind keeping Keller was that someone has to play here and we have to get to the cap floor, and Keller's still going to be good by the time we get good again.
Yeah.
And oh boy, did that come sooner than they thought. Not to mention Nick Schmaltz, who's continuing to be an awesome center for them. Matthias Michelli's sick.
Yeah. Sorry. I was just going to say they did with Keller what many people thought Chicago should do with DeBrincat.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly it. 100%. That's actually, damn. Okay. Good call there. Like, Matthias Michelli's sick. Lawson Kraus is super underrated. I have
him. Yeah. Michelli came out of nowhere.
Absolutely nowhere.
In my mind, anyways. Like, obviously, I've come to know about him over the past year or so, but I didn't know who he was to start this season last year. Like, I never heard his name before. I could not tell you what round he was drafted in, or even if he was drafted. Like, I could not tell you anything about this guy.
So Michelli was a fourth rounder in 2019, but I would almost argue that even more interesting, maybe not interesting, but JJ Moser, he's a defenseman. He's already playing 20 minutes a night. He is a second rounder in 2021, and he played the full year last year. You just don't see that with defensemen. No. You really don't see that with defensemen. Forwards, it happens. Because there's so many more spots for forwards and so many more forwards. Forwards are just, like, able to slot in and play, like, fourth line, whatever. But J.J. Moser was, like, a full-time NHLer last year as a second-round pick from 2021, which is a crazy turnaround on a non-first-round pick defenseman.
Yeah.
And it's just cool seeing Arizona, like, actually kind of taking advantage of when their guys are cheap, unlike other teams that we know of and root for. But yeah, I mean, it, and it's kind of funny too, because, like, their top guys, like your Keller, your Schmaltz, are all signed. So they're going to be cap flexible for a long time, unless Cooley goes and puts up like 80 points next year and commands like a massive extension, which I wouldn't rule out and definitely wouldn't be an issue for the Coyotes. But like, this team's going to stay cheap and deep for a while, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I was just trying to look up there. Like, expected goals to see who's playing well.
I'm gonna look
like Michelli. Michelli is right up near the top of their list for, like, even strength.
Oh my god,
expected goals percentage too. Like, they just have so many, it feels like, underrated players that play well. Like, Nick Bjugstad too, I feel like, is always one of those bottom six players that just is effective.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, yeah, here's
they're just a fun team that has a lot of guys you can kind of root for.
Here's something kind of insane. So, okay, one of the big storylines over the last few years of the Coyotes was their mass roster exodus and their hoarding of draft picks, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you had to guess, I'm probably going to give away the answer here, by the way I phrased the question. If you had to guess, would you say that their big run of picks has passed or is still on the come, like is still on the horizon?
I think I would have known this either way, but I think it's, like, still to come. Because I know a lot of their picks they were acquiring, like, even a year or two ago were, like, 24 or 25.
Yeah, and so in my head, it was like, okay, they got the Sens first for Chychrun. I can't remember who else they got firsts from for players. But now that I kind of think about it, I don't think they got a lot of, like, first-round picks in all of those trades they were making. It was all seconds and thirds, as well as like retaining salaries or like trading away lower level players or taking on bad contracts and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So they have all their firsts, but they don't have any additional firsts in the next 3 years. However, in 2024, they have 3 second round picks and 3 third round picks. In 2025, they have 4 second round picks and 2 third round picks. And in 2026, they have 3 second-round picks and 2 third-round picks.
Yeah, that's wild.
Like, they're going to be
They're going to be so
They're
static.
Already winning. And again, progression isn't linear in the NHL, so they might still have another couple of lean years, which is definitely possible. I wouldn't doubt it out. I wouldn't even doubt out if they sort of like fell off a little bit this year. Mm-hmm. But all of their picks are still coming.
Yeah, and like, what are they spending cap-wise?
They're $3 million under the cap, so they have $15 million in deadline cap space this year. Okay. However,
I was just curious if they were still being semi-conservative spending wise. Like,
they have zero defensemen signed beyond this season.
Okay.
And their tandem right now, oh my god, this is crazy. Okay, Vemelka is signed at 2.725 this year and next. Connor Ingram is in the first year of a 3-year deal worth 1.95 a year.
No way.
So their tandem for the next 2 years is under $5 million. They have zero defensemen signed beyond this season. Three of their defensemen are RFAs. I'd imagine Sean Durzi and JJ Moser are guaranteed keepers. Yusso Valimaki probably as well. I'm not sure. I don't know much about Michael Kesselring, but he's listed as an RFA.
You think Josh Brown's going to stick around?
That's probably not up to Josh Brown. In terms of forwards, they've got Clayton Keller signed until 28-29. They've got Nick Schmaltz signed for the next 3 years, including this one. They've got Lawson Crouse signed for 3 more years after this season, so 4 years. And then Matthias Michelli and Logan Cooley are both in the first year of 3-year contracts. Everyone else is either expiring this year or next year. This team is
set up well.
Okay, if you look around the league, there's not a lot of situations I take over Arizona's. Off ice, separate.
Yeah.
And assuming Oliver Ekman-Larsson money does not surpass $650,000 in a given season.
Yeah, yeah. You're not worried about the money there. You're just worried about having one of those slots.
Yeah, exactly.
For 7 years. What was I going to say?
If you look around the league.
Now they just need some of their, like, drafted defensemen or like future drafted defensemen to hit. Like that's their forwards are going to be unreal. They took some swings on some Russians.
I think they were both defensemen this year too.
Yeah,
right?
They were both defensemen. Okay. So we'll see how those guys pan out, but man.
Who could they have taken? I'm gonna look up the draft and see who they could have taken.
Well, I just remember saying who to both of their names.
Me too, but that's because they're Russian, not because we heard they were bad. It also wasn't a terribly deep draft beyond the top seven.
I think one of them is actually doing really well in the KHL right now.
So they took Dmitry Simashev, defenseman, who's playing for the Yaroslav Loko Junior, which I assume is just a major junior team in Russia. I don't know how he's doing. I'm not going to check. But this is the thing. I really wanted them to take Matvei Michkov, and they didn't. Matvei Michkov went 7th overall to Philly, who looks like he's going to be absolutely absurd for them. And then at 12, they took Daniil Boot, who plays for the exact same team in Russia, which is actually kind of sick. So they've got... So this is wrong. So the players they drafted, what I was looking at was the team that they were playing for when they were drafted. Both players are in the KHL right now. Daniil Boot is performing at half a point a game, so 13 points in 28 games, 7 of them goals, which... As an 18-year-old defenseman, and the KHL is notoriously stingy on goals. As for Simashev, I don't know if he's playing for the same KHL. He's playing for the same KHL team. Not as much offensive numbers, but as a defenseman, like, that's not really a good indication. He's got 5 points in 34 games. So both guys are playing full-time minutes in the KHL. I don't really know what else to add beyond that. There's not a lot of advanced stats on KHL guys besides points, which is not an advanced stat.
That's not bad. Like, that's... They're playing against men. They're 18. They're getting still some points. Like, it's... I'm just curious to see how they progress when they eventually move over to North America.
My only gripe with Arizona is the fact that they didn't take Michkov. I think that's going to be looked at. Every single team from, I don't know, 3 on in the 2023 draft is going to be pissed that they didn't take Matvei Michkov. I think the top 3 is very, like, happy with their guys right now. obviously Bedard, Carlson, and Fantilli. But from four on, I think everyone whiffed by not being willing to wait 2 to 3 seasons for Matvei Michkov to come over, especially Arizona, where it would have lined up perfectly with all their other picks starting to make waves in the minors, as well as a new rink. But
yeah,
Matvei Michkov miss aside, there is not, besides teams that are in a cup window right now, I don't know if there's a situation I'm taking over Arizona's.
It's certainly up there.
It's up there for sure. In terms of like picks and who they have already and cap flexibility, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, like I'm looking at it. I'm like, okay, New Jersey I'd take. Like, do you take Buffalo's situation over Arizona's?
Ooh.
That's so close.
I don't know.
That's so tough, man.
That one is tough.
And if you'd have asked me next year, I've kicked you in the face and told you Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah.
100%.
Ooh. Because I feel like Arizona could turn the corner here in the next like 2 years and be an impact team in that division. Buffalo, after seeing their start now, I'm not entirely sure they're as close with the competition in their division in comparison to Arizona.
Yeah.
So like it's, oh, I don't know. It's close. Like if you're purely looking for success, like on ice success.
Arizona's in a playoff spot right now. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I don't know. It's December and it just became December, but Arizona's in a playoff spot right now. And
like, is Buffalo getting to the same point where Ottawa is right now that they don't have many more people coming up?
No, like I don't think so.
Benson, who else do they got?
Like, I think they've got guys that are hurt right now. Like, they've got so much development still. Because that's the thing too, right? Is like looking at Ottawa, everyone's waiting on internal development. How much more is there going to be, right?
Well, yeah, there won't be other than the guys who are on the team right now, essentially.
But even then, like even from that respect, how much more internal development are you getting from 90-point Tim Stützle and 24-year-old Brady Tkachuk, etc.? I think if you look at Buffalo, let me check.
I'm curious. I don't know off the top of my head.
Like Owen Power isn't really doing anything yet, right? Like he's playing big minutes and playing good hockey, but he's not doing anything yet at an elite level. Mm-hmm. Like I think you're kind of waiting for him to explode in the similar way that Dahlin did. Like Zach Benson, I just mentioned. Jack Quinn is like a guy who could score like 30 to 40 goals a year one time, and he's just kind of hurt and no one's noticed. Matthew Savoie.
Yeah, okay. They got more. Yeah.
They've got guys. And that's like kind of ignoring their goal situation.
I think it's supposed to be good too. Noah Ostlund is supposed to be good.
I think ignoring their goalie situation too, where they have arguably the best goalie tweener prospect in the NHL right now, like in Devon Levi.
In Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen's
baby. Yeah, like
a case to be a starter.
I think Buffalo's a little safer than Ottawa is in terms of like.
Yeah, I wasn't even like going with Ottawa. I was just trying to see like what they still have coming in comparison to like what Arizona has coming.
So, right.
Like, in my head, I was thinking like Buffalo's present and what they'll become or Arizona's future.
I think the difference is though, is that with Buffalo, what they have is in the organization. Unless like they keep playing like shit this year and get another top 10 pick.
I think I still take Buffalo, but slimly.
Because what they have is like they have it. Whereas Arizona, it's a billion lottery tickets.
And they have more coming up than I thought, like in terms of prospects.
True.
Like they have more than I knew.
Buffalo still also has a ton of cap space still.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're still set up pretty well. Those long-term contracts they have too are great. So
they are great. Like,
yeah.
Tage and Cousins down the middle at 14 and a bit. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
All right. So Arizona, Buffalo, Stanley Cup Final 2027. Heard it here first. Let's wrap up.
Yes, sir.
Big Coyotes Alrighty. Pod. Big Coyotes Pod today.
You know what? We love a little Arizona.
We give them their flowers. Hit the outro.
Yes, sir. Let's wrap it up.
Oh my God. That three-peat of Stanley Cup matchups between the Sabres and the Arizona Coyotes in the late 2020s is going to be awesome.
Electric. Maybe throw Devils in there.
Yeah. Fuck. True. Anaheim? Oh, Bedard's Blackhawks, too.